Chance Madison over it. It is Madison! And he's done it! A phenomenal free kick from James Madison!
Hello and welcome to the latest By the Minute Aberdeen podcast. Joining me tonight, I've once again, for not quite the final time this year, Martin Clunas. How are you doing, Martin?
I'm doing okay, Richard. Nice to be back.
Thank you for coming back, despite my attempts to bully you each and every week. And joining us today also, we've got Christy Keenan. Now, Christy is another exiled Dons fan, this time in the rather enviable surroundings of Milan. However, even that probably wasn't enough to stop him feeling as rotten as the rest of us when he heard the score from Dingwall on Saturday. How are you doing, Christy?
I'm doing really well, Richard. Nice to be on, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Now, as well as suffering under the spell of the Dons, Christy has a master's degree in sports psychology. Now, we've bandied around terms questioning the mental fortitude of the manager and his team during the course of this season, so we thought it might be quite useful to seek a semi-informed view on that front. And we'll come to that more in a few minutes' time. But first, unfortunately, we have to go to the aftermath of Victoria Park on Saturday. And another reversal in what was another closely fought battle on the field. So I think the first questions that are going to be raised, and were raised in fact pre-kickoff, Martin, were about the team selection and in two key positions, Wes Burns and Jaden Stockley being selected ahead of two key players for Aberdeen in recent years, Niall McGinn and Adam Rooney. What were your thoughts on that generally?
Well, I've said it so many times on here, I know I really, you know, if Niall McGinn is remotely near being fit, then I want him playing. Quite really disappointing to see him not starting. I mean, we've heard all sorts of things about maybe contract talk and this and that, but there's been nothing confirmed because Derek McInnes doesn't give information like that away. He keeps his cards close to his chest. So we have to assume that there was some other reason. And then we found out after that there was supposedly a little bit of tiredness, which is fair to be expected. I mean, the guy, 10-day summer break. But not seeing McGinn playing is disappointing. Tired or not, Rooney has been horribly out of form. I personally would still play him ahead of Stockley. I think that Stockley hasn't really impressed very much, and I think Rooney would probably be a better option against a team like Ross County. But it's disappointing seeing someone like Niall McGinn not playing. The talent he has, Wes Burns, he's here on loan. He's not really impressed. He's came on in games here and there, and he's not had a lot of game time. I do understand that. I'm really disappointed to see that Stockley and Burns were in.
When it comes to the Adam Rooney versus Jaden Stockley question, at what point does form become a consideration against proven quality? It's been over 600 minutes since Adam Rooney scored a goal from open play. Admittedly, it's not as if he's been squandering chances left, right and centre in that time.
Yeah, honestly, guys, I would always play Rooney unless, sounds ridiculous, unless I have a strong reason not to. In other words, unless his main competitor is really breathing down his neck for the number 9 jersey. And Stockley hasn't been doing that. So I would default to having Rooney in the team. If Stockley, if his form demands he start, fair enough, Rooney couldn't complain with being dropped or rested or rotated or whatever. But Stockley, if you ask me, is not doing enough to warrant keeping our main striker out of the team. And also the thing with Rooney that I think gets overlooked a lot of the time is he's a leader and a winner. We've got some of them, particularly when we're not in the form of our lives. I would have him, I would get as many of them on the park as I possibly can to sort of steer the ship back on track.
That phrase about being a winner we hear a lot, Christy, but surely all professional sportsmen are going to have that. They're going to be winners, aren't they?
Like, logically, we would think so. They're professionals. That's part of the job. The reality is, like, different personality types have different responses to when the chips are down. And I think that's fine. I think any good football team, any good organisation of any sort has a decent balance. You can't have, you know, 11 sort of alphas out there just Scott Browning it up. You know, you're not gonna finish with 11 men on the park too often. You've got to have that balance. But Rooney's one of those guys who time has told us in his 2 years with the club, we've been able to rely on him. If it's, you know, in terms of scoring penalties, that's great. That's a goal. I don't care if it's open play or not. By and large, apart from that one time in Maribor, he's come through for us when given a good chance in a big game.
Probably the first use of Scott Brown as a verb on this podcast, so well done there, Christy. Deeper analysing what it means to bring in Jadon Stockley for Adam Rooney, it means a team has got to play in a slightly different way, doesn't it, Martin? It means that after years of making sure that the crosses into the box are lower and you know, played across with more pace to utilise Rooney's ability to find space in the box, really, to get the best out of Jadon Stockley, they've got to change that and they've got to go more aerial, don't they? But that takes time, doesn't it?
As much as they work on things in training, there's obviously no substitute for playing competitive football, and so you're changing the style of the team. Stockley has really, in the games that we've seen him in, even, you know, playing the style that suits him, he's not really, you know, impressed a hell of a lot. I mean, I'm not going to go back over the miss at Ibrox. Some of the performances, you know, the either side of that, of, you know, he's not been great either. Last season we spoke about we maybe need to bring in this kind of target man, but the problem is we've brought in a guy who kinda fits that role. But the team don't seem to be able to follow the route and the path to get the best out of a player who is what you would describe as, I know, a big lump up front and a target man. And
yeah, and this is one of those situations where you've really got to feel for the manager, because a lot of people, and I think with, you know, quite fairly, around this time last year or in the latter stages of last season, we're saying that we're becoming predictable. We're, you know, the fans could see it. Teams were setting up a certain way against us because they always knew what our team would be. We had a very clear first 11, a very obvious strongest team, and we would by and large play that team. Now McInnes has gone out and he's bought differently. He's brought in guys like Burns and Stockley to give us different options, because we were becoming a little bit predictable, but the team's been slow to adapt to bring the best out of those guys. So I do feel for the manager a little bit there. It's a real balancing act.
But of course, it's not just about the team adapting, is it, Christy? The fact is that by seeking to expand the options available, which you're absolutely right, this was one of the criticisms towards the end of last season, and one of the things I think the manager himself identified towards the end of last season, that he didn't have the options on the bench to change things when things were going against him. But then in order to keep players happy or at the first sign of a loss of form, he's dropping some key players from the last couple of seasons, isn't he?
Yep, he definitely is. It's a really tough one. If I'm honest, I don't know what the answer is. With this one, we talk about, I mean, for so long, all we've heard from the fans is McInnes has his favourites. You know, what does player X have to do to get dropped? He needs rested. Again, with a, you know, not unfairly. But then we go through a little patchy spell. He rotates a bit, and that's not working out too well either. A little bit of luck can make a difference. But the reality is, you know, he's doing, I think he's within his rights to put a bit of faith in guys like Burns and Stockley, but they're not really taking the chances. All McInnes can really do is provide these guys with opportunities, and it's kind of up to them to take them, and they've not really done that.
Whereas Burns has certainly had a few chances, started a couple of games this season, as well as quite a few minutes off the bench. Somebody that hasn't had that many chances in the first team is somebody we signed at the start of the summer transfer window, Miles Storey, who actually got 4 minutes on Saturday, coming on when the scores were tied at 1-1. There was somebody that took exception to us suggesting on Twitter that it was a Miles Storey effect that we suddenly went 2-1 down. But enough of that. Christy, we talked about this last week. I'll just give you the opportunity to say your piece on him. He's somebody that's just not, it's to my mind anyway, fitting into the way we've ever tried to play football.
Honestly, I don't have a whole lot to say on this one because there's clearly more to it than any of us know about. I haven't got a clue why he's not made an impression at all. I can only assume that he's not turning on in training. I've got a close friend who's a Thistle fan who was at the under-20s Dons Park Thistle last week and said Storey played and was pretty much a passenger. I don't know what's happened with the guy, but his, certainly, based on last season's form, he's got ability. He looked very, very good against us. I can't really add to the debate that you guys had last week about him. He's a good player, and I don't really know why he's not getting a look at.
Well, one thing that was certainly the hallmark of early Derek McInnes' sides with us, and also his side that he built up at St Johnston, was that, you know, first and foremost, that we were very hard to play through. That seems to have changed this season. Now, I just wonder, and again, Christy, I'll come to you first on this, whether it's because we are attempting to become more adventurous, and I think the style of play at which we're playing more creative players in the centre of midfield than we might have done a couple of years ago, or simply that the spine of a team now isn't quite as strong as we had a few years ago.
Yeah, I think you've kind of nailed it there already, Richard. I think we're trying to be a little more creative. We don't have the same level of experience in the centre of midfield or in the spine of the team, really, without Willow and Robson, who were, I mean, really terrific players for us. You can't downplay just how big an impact they had on the whole psyche of the squad. They were terrific signings. And without them on or around the pitch, even on the bench, a guy like, knowing that you've got a guy like Willow who could come on and really just with his energy, if nothing else, get the supporters going again. He was always buzzing around, just flying into tackles and things. It just brings the energy up. We've lacked that this season. We've got more ball players on there. Madsen's obviously a terrific talent, deserves to be in the team. And let's be honest, I think Madison's a far better player than Willow Flood ever was. But there's always room for a Willow Flood in the squad. I think we're missing him. I think we're missing Robson. I think we're missing the leaders in the centre of the park who could provide us something that, unfortunately, the guys in there at the moment can't quite do.
And Martin, again, one of the changes in the way we're playing seems to be that we're getting a lot more possession. I think there have been games in past seasons where we've had a lot of possession, but it's much more apparent now that we'll go to away games and dominate possession like we did on Saturday, 57% according to the BBC stats. We went to Ibrox against a side known for hogging the ball, and it was 50-50 there as well. Being on the ball, having possession in the opposition half doesn't seem to be an issue, but it's that lack of quality chances we're creating. Are we too rushed, too hurried when we see the goalposts?
I think you might be right there. I mean, we've had a lot of the ball because, you know, one of the criticisms that guys like Ryan Jack get is that maybe they slow the play down, they keep it too much. We just spoke about having, you know, someone like Barry Robson or Willow Flood the team. Now, Barry Robson, for all he was able to get stuck in, he was quite a good footballer. We're keeping the ball and we're having lots of possession, but it's getting there and creating those chances and having Madison, and so okay, McGinn was benched. You know, you've got Hayes on the pitch. You know, Kenny McLean isn't bad. You know, they've got these guys, but you know, we're not really creating real quality chances. When we get there, you know, nobody seems to want to take a shot from distance. There seems to be a style of play where it's sort of like, let's get it out wide to these guys. Whereas I see there's differences in how to be direct. You know, being direct doesn't necessarily mean just lumping it up to someone, even Rooney or Jaden Stockley. You know, you can be direct where you try to get the ball, you know, get shots off at goal. You know, put defence, put goalie keepers under pressure. I mean, we've seen some games this season where we've not had a shot in anger in the first 45 minutes. For a team that has real genuine ambitions about being the second place team in the league, that's just not good enough.
Well, I would take issue with that slightly, Martin, because I think one of the sort of only attacking threats in that first half on Saturday was Kenny McLean's long-distance shooting. I just wonder again, Christy, that it's the hardest part of the game. We know that, scoring goals and creating chances. It can't all be down to confidence, is it?
No, it's not. There's many factors. Confidence is part of it. Luck is part of it, unfortunately. People don't really like to talk about it, but it is a big factor. The way the ball breaks in the box, a goalkeeper spilling a shot, I don't know, even something getting deflected out for a corner that you can then get a chance from. We haven't had too much of that recently. There are many, many factors, not all related to confidence. It's just confidence seems to be the catch-all sort of umbrella that we can put a misfiring team. We can just sort of write it off as a lack of confidence. But I think it's doing it a little bit of a disservice. We need more composure in the final third. And often when a team is struggling or when an individual is struggling in any kind of pursuit, they snatch a little bit. They want to get back to how it was, maybe a little too quickly, a little too eagerly. They lack composure, that clarity of thought, that clarity of decision making. And I think we're seeing a little bit of that right now. But I just want to keep it all in proportion. Battered Killy a couple of weeks ago, less than a fortnight ago. Losing on Saturday is obviously a poor result, as you guys mentioned earlier, for a team that has designs on being at least the second best in the league. We can't go losing those games. But at the same time, we won't get out of a little downswing by panicking or rushing or being too reactionary.
Well, no, but I think, again, there's been evidence of that in recent games as well. I think I attribute the loss of the second goal against Rangers to a desire just to desperately win that ball back, lose shape, lose tactical discipline, and it cost us that second goal. Now, we've never...
Yeah, that cost us in the cup final too.
To some degree, absolutely. And we've never been good enough to expect to pitch up at away grounds, difficult away grounds like Dingwall, and automatically win. Now, I saw someone speak about entitlement within the dressing room this week. But surely, if there's an entitlement around the place, it's got to be with some of our support right now.
Yeah, we're generally Aberdonians. We're a level-headed bunch. I think we're generally fair. All football fans get a little bit worked up, you know, in the 24 hours surrounding any game. I think some of the criticism has been a bit unfair, but I also see where it's coming from. You know, it's not a game that we should ever be content about losing. But I don't know. I'd stop short of calling it entitlement from the fans' point of view.
Now, we did get back on terms in the game, owing in large part to good work from our attacking fullbacks and a calm finish, not a rushed finish. Then they go down to 10 men, and surely the momentum's only going to go one way in this game. But Martin, if you'd like to break down how we lost one of the most calamitous goals I've seen us lose in quite some time.
Where do you start? There's one of these things where, you know, we talk about, you know, you just want a centre half or one of your players to put their foot through the thing. Nobody seemed to kind of really claim the ball and just say, let's get this ball out of there. No, there was that big slash from Considine that just sort of, you know, up in the air and then... It's like it lands and no Aberdeen player seemed to really want the ball. Just this goal mouth mess where I've watched it so many times and I can't understand how we've managed to concede a goal from that. We've got good defenders at the club. We've got good midfielders at the club. The goal was just nonsense.
Well, that's one description, Martin, absolutely. To me, Christy, it spoke of it. It's a lot of muddled and frazzled minds out there.
Yeah. Honestly, it's just a bit of a write-off. No one taking charge in there. It's really tough because I can't help but think back. Do you remember the Motherwell game at the end of a couple of seasons ago when we had that situation, the Stephen McLean game, where Langfield, our goalkeeper, tried to take charge and then ended up a total disaster, albeit without much help from the referee. So it's one of these situations where, you know, the temptation is to say somebody needs to take charge, but at the same time you can't go flying in. You know, it was a disaster. It was a write off. but I don't want to be too down on the group of players who, by and large, do defend very well.
And that was that on Saturday. A very disappointing defeat. But yeah, I think we do have to keep this in some form of perspective. We've only ever won twice up in Dingwall. It's the use of the phrase hard place to go. Every ground in this league, unless you're Celtic, is a tough place to go. Look at the league table. If you can lose in Dingwall, you can lose anywhere. We're just not good enough and haven't been many last of the last 30 seasons to expect to pitch up at these grounds and win. Sure, we all wanted to win, and there's a great desire out there to see us win. But yeah, I still think that a lot of the overreaction online is still stemming from the disappointment to the League Cup final and then the defeat at Ibrox a week later. I think that'll be rebounding around the support for quite a few months to come, actually. Anyway, moving on. We have spoken a lot about qualities such as leadership, or a lack thereof, and indeed the overall mentality of the squad and the manager this season. Particularly, as we've spoken about, with the departure from the playing side of players such as Barry Robson, Willow Flood, going back a couple of years, Russell Anderson. These guys really helped Derek McInnes turn a side that he'd inherited, which had been ninth place three seasons in a row before he pitched up, into one that's contending for trophies. Now, Christy, I know it's not easy to assess from out with the camp, but does Derek McInnes strike you as a strong leader?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. I'd be amazed. I find it ludicrous if anyone argued to the contrary, to be honest.
And how is he able to translate that onto the football pitch? I mean, you talked earlier on about having alpha characters and winners such as Adam Rooney. But how best do you translate that from the dressing room to the pitch?
Composure, being measured, making sure every communication has a purpose. I think a lot of the times fans, I don't want to denigrate fans, is that the right word? But sometimes we can get a bit hyped up about seeing someone going crazy on the touchline, you know, being gesticulating wildly. It doesn't do a lot of good. Generally, it causes more confusion on the park. You want clarity of thought, you want clarity of communication, you want measured responses. Because if you're at 100 miles an hour all the time, then where can you go from there? When you have a serious point to make, or a substitution, etc., or you have a point to relay to the players on the park. So I think McInnes, his body language is great. His communication skills, we know from the way he talks to the press, is outstanding. And I have absolutely no doubt that he, like, very rarely, I think, do we see a performance from us that's totally disorganized. I think, okay, we have isolated moments, like in the game in midweek, the game at the weekend, I should say. But by and large, the players are well drilled, they're well disciplined, and that all stems from good management.
We tried to examine the role of captaincy a few times on this show. You know, we had Craig Wright on, former Scotland cricket captain, to try and talk about his role. Obviously, it's a more important role in cricket in terms of the tactics on field, but do we overstate that role in football, do you think, Christy? And, I mean, surely it's responsibility of not just the captain, but all 11 players to try and translate what the manager wants on the pitch.
Yeah, I think we overstate it in part and understate it in part. Certainly in previous seasons when Ryan Jack or Mark Reynolds has had the armband, we haven't noticed like a discernible drop-off in leadership, but also in part that's because they've had very experienced campaigners around them. Russell, when Reynolds had the armband, and then Robson and Willow as well. In recent years, Paul Quinn as well was a very big leader, very big personality who brought the standard of others around him up because he was a constant communicator. So leadership doesn't have to just come from the captain. Now, I guess a lot of the time the real question is, does leadership, like, okay, so it doesn't just have to come from the captain, but is it coming from the captain? At the moment, if you're looking around at Ryan Jack, and you guys see more games than I do, obviously me being here in Italy, But is Ryan Jack leading effectively, authoritatively? Is he someone that, when the chips are down, the younger players, or in fact any of the players, can turn to, look at, and really feel like he's doing everything he can to pull the level up of those around him? I like Ryan Jack. He's a terrific player. I think he's a good captain by and large, but he definitely needs others around him doing likewise, because he alone does not have the force of personality to single-handedly raise the games of others around him in the same way that some of our previous players did.
And when we speak about balance of a squad of supporters, we talk about making sure we've got enough right-sided attackers or whatever, but having that psychological balance is important as well, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's massive. You need certain players who are all about fire, you know, some players who you know will you know, go to the trenches or whatever the metaphor is for the team. And you need some cool heads, you need some calm heads in there as well. You need some guys like Shinny, who isn't afraid to get in an opponent's face, and that may not have all that much of an impact on the park, but it can get the fans going, and that in turn can get the players going. Generally, I like the fact that we have very good discipline. We tend not to get red and yellow cards for cheap offences. I think it's really important to keep discipline, because if you're keeping discipline, it's by and large a sign that you're making clear-headed decisions. Generally a good thing in any competitive pursuit.
And the obvious question then falls, do you think the balance on that front is right at the moment within the current squad?
I don't think it's far wrong. We change the first 11 on a fairly regular basis at the moment, which suggests that we've not quite found the balance. But football is a squad game anyway, so I think it is more important to make sure the balance is in the squad as opposed to, you know, having it 100% perfect on the park at any given moment. A lot of people talk about, you know, does the manager know his strongest 11 and all that. I mean, I disagree fundamentally with that idea. Like, the manager knows, I think he believes he knows his strongest 11 for different games, you know, and that strongest 11 can vary depending on the opponent. And that's just good management to be able to rotate, to be able to tweak your squad. I just think back to that game last year at Parkhead, Tynecastle, when we won 3-1. And Goodwillie was in the team from out of nowhere. Not one of us would have said that was a good decision. But McInnes had clearly seen something through the week that led him to believe that Goody could pull the level of those around him up in that game, and he did. He had a terrific game, actually. The whole first 11 debate, I think it's more important to make sure you have balance in the squad, because these are, like, you know, the impact of players, not just on the park. I hate to go all Jimmy Calderwood and talk about good to have around the place and stuff, because it's a cliche, but it is true. You do need positive influences in the environment.
Well, I just want to raise something that has been a bee in the bonnet of Grant Fiskin lately, that some of Derek's public pronouncements ahead of the game, ahead of the cup final, ahead of the game at Ibrox. Now, what he's in public may be different from what he says in private, and I would imagine it is different, but they've attempted to put the squad in the place of the underdog ahead of those games, a situation which didn't really seem to suit the team, certainly didn't get the response he may have expected from his own players. Might it have helped to diminish the belief in his own squad?
Probably not, no, if I'm honest. I think it's a bit of hindsight bias going on there, where we know the outcome and we kind of retrofit the reason for it. We know that we didn't turn up on the day in the cup final, so we assume that, or we don't assume, but we can conclude that it was related to the way that McInnes spoke in the media. But I really don't believe that the two are related at all. There's every chance that if he had said, you know, we're favourites and we're the better team, and I, you etc., etc., we had lost 5-0. I don't think a lot gets sort of made of managers' quotes, but generally, in hindsight, generally we like to retrofit the logic afterwards and sort of erroneously conclude that it had an impact, either positive or negative. Like Mourinho being the obvious example, people said, you know, he was a master at Chelsea because he cultivated a siege mentality right up until the moment that he had a disaster and got sacked. And then suddenly the mistake he made was he had a siege mentality. You know, it's inconsistent, and I don't think it's a true reflection on what goes on.
Well, I guess what's being said in the media, what's being written, it's one of the many outside pressures players are going to have to deal with. And again, this will come down to individual characters, I guess, but how easy is it to get into that bubble? I know you were, for a spell, a full-time professional poker player. How easy is it just to focus on the game in front of you?
Yeah, this is something like I could geek out about all day, but I'll try to spare you guys. but it's really, I call it building your trigger, where you find the preparation, the routine that facilitates your best performance, and then you just try to replicate it. You try to sort of engineer a connection between the outcome and the preparation, and before long you can almost trick your mind into associating your performance with that routine, so that when you undergo that routine, you're automatically into that nice bubble, that flow state, as we call it. In poker, I find it very easy because there's far less external stimulus. It's far easier to, like, there isn't that novelty. There isn't an audience. There's not a referee. There's not an opponent trying to, you know, niggle at you all game long, etc. So it's far, far easier for me to make decisions under conditions of uncertainty, because there's a constant environment. That's not the case in football. So it really, in large part, comes down to how effectively the players build their own triggers. And I know the management staff, I know the club as a whole tries to do its bit in terms of taking care of little details, so there aren't, you know, the players are well prepared for matches beforehand. They're well treated. It's very professional around the club. And a lot of that is to ensure that the players have a nice, consistent, familiar environment and routine before every game, which helps them get into that flow state and thus perform to their best. But it's no guarantee of peak performance. That's an important thing to consider. You're doing your preparation, you're taking care of the variables, but it's never a guarantee.
Christy, thanks very much for that. As it happens, we've got an interview coming up with Lee Richardson, which we'll put out during the winter break. Lee himself is now a sports psychologist, so we'll come back to that area during the course of that interview if you're at all interested in that. So listen out for that. But obviously, as well, speaking about his time at Aberdeen. So as we say, that'll be out during the winter break. But moving on Friday night, live on TV, we have a game against Motherwell down at Fir Park. And as we often do ahead of these games, we spoke to the guys at the MFC podcast to get the Motherwell view on how things are shaping up. So yeah, it's great to be able to welcome Andy Ross back onto the show. Andy, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks, Richard. It's good to be back on as well, thank you.
Old friend of the show, obviously. So by quirk of nature, and indeed the Pittodrie floodlights, this is the first time that we've played Motherwell this season. Fair to say you're scrambling a little bit for form, like almost every other club in the league, yeah?
Yeah, I would agree with that. The league's so tight from fourth down to 12th. Although I do think that kind of Hearts, Aberdeen, St Johnstone, they'll be fighting out for, well, including Rangers as well, obviously, for the places in the top five. The rest of us will fight over the scraps. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the next couple of weeks go, because I don't want to put too much emphasis on
the three games that we've got before the end of the year, but I think they could be quite important when it comes to seeing where the final finishes are when we go into that split, because, as I say, a few results can propel you up the league, but on the other hand, a few defeats and you can be really down there fighting for your life. So it's an interesting time of the season, and it's going to be a really big couple of weeks for Motherwell.
I'm imagining the feeling for Motherwell is that, apart from Celtic, who you gave a very good game to, you can beat anybody at home, can't you?
Yeah, I'd agree with that again. I think we've shown that over the last couple of seasons. We are quite consistent at home. Our 3-0 defeat at home to Inverness aside, pretty solid at Fir Park this season. Celtic game, you just reminded me of again. That's still a bit of a sore one, to be honest, because I thought that was by far our best performance of the season. It was never a game we should have come away with 0 points from, but the reality is we did. We followed it up with poor stalemate against Kilmarnock. The Aberdeen game obviously didn't start, and then the St Johnstone game at the weekend where we go ahead, which we always seem to do against St Johnstone, to be honest, and normally we go on to lose 2-1. So I suppose that was a slight improvement in the result. But again, we need to be taking these 3 points, because you look at the other teams around us and all the results kind of match up. And before it was 0-0 draws, and then last weekend it was 1-1 results, with Ross County being the only team kind of in and amongst us to pick up the 3 points.
Yeah, I wonder who they beat. Anyway, yeah, I mean, obviously, you talk about Hearts, Aberdeen, St Johnstone maybe pulling away, and the rest of you maybe competing for sixth. Is there any concern that, you know, at this point in the season, there's a long way to go, clearly, but obviously 11th and 12th are still very much in the mix as well.
That's always a genuine concern. I think that if you ask the majority of Motherwell supporters, their aim at the start of the season is to have a solid campaign. Yes, the top six is always on the radar and is where we hope to be, but we've got no divine right to be battling it out in the top half of the league, given our budget is fairly small. Look at the summer and guys like Ben Hall leaving, Marvin Johnson left. It's very hard to replace like for like in this league, and quite often, as was the case this season, we've replaced them with guys from the lower leagues down south, and it's a gamble, basically. A few of these guys have yet to find their feet. A few guys like Richard Tate, Ben Hennigan have done very well. Louis Moult, again, just such a pivotal player in our squad. So a lot of the teams in the lower half of the league, they tend to buy a hell of a lot of players because they're buying in bulk for small wages and hoping they find a few gems in amongst there. And I suppose with Motherwell, with guys like Louis Moult, Marvin Johnson, we have managed to strike it lucky in the transfer market in recent years. This season, I would say Hennigan and Tate have been very good, but there's been a few disappointments in there as well.
So this season, what areas of the team have been working on, which haven't, or have they just all been as inconsistent as your overall form?
Pretty much. I think there's a key player in our squad is Chris Cadden, who Scotland under 21 internationalist, broke through the latter half of last season, and since then has been an ever-present. I think it kind of came out of the blue, Cadden's emergence into the team, to be honest, but he's been fantastic up front, posed a real threat with Scott McDonald. You've got Cadden going forward, you've got Louis Moult. There is goals in the team, and when Moult's on song, I would say he's right up there with the best strikers in the league. He's fantastic, and you'll look at the goals he scored against Celtic, particularly the opening goal the other week. That's what Louis Moult can do, and he does it on a consistent basis as well. It's now a case of you're getting to the turn of the year and that window opening again. There's definitely going to be interest in Cadden. There will most likely be interest in Moult as well, I would suspect. It's just the kind of perils of being a selling club. You develop guys on to sell for a profit in the end.
Discussion we've been having here quite frequently about the lack of a pathway for our young players, but given the under-21s result today, I'm not sure there is much talent in our under-21s anyway.
We couldn't
mention that, I'm afraid. The losing side in these cases always says it's all just about development, but yeah, that was some hammering. But obviously, Motherwell under-20s team, there's a good foundation there. They won the Youth Cup last year, going well in the league this year. And it's absolutely key, and really it's a key for every club out with Celtic in this league.
Mark McGee has shown in his second spell here that there's a clear pathway from the under-20s into the first team this season. The likes of Jake Hasty, Jack McMillan, Ross McLean, who's done very well since he came into the team. And you've still got the guys like Dom Thomas, who is on the periphery. Just now, guys like Cadden have stepped right into the team. Ben Hall last season. So there's a definite progression from the 20s into the first team. What is so frustrating is the fact that this elite league and everything else, it could really, really hamper teams like Motherwell. You look at today's result, surely that's a real sign to the Scottish footballing authorities that they don't split up leagues in terms of bank balances and support, given that Motherwell have been an established team in the top flight for 30 years now. It would be a miss to a team that have produced a lot of young Scottish talent to kind of almost push them down a level. I just don't understand that. I find it very frustrating, this. And I think it's causing real concern amongst the hierarchy at the club as well.
Yeah, there's a whole other show, really, picking through the aspects of Project Brave, cult teams and all. But Andy, thanks very much for your time. Looking forward to the game on Friday. And it's certainly matches between the two since Mark McGee went there have always been pretty entertaining games. And hopefully it is the case on Friday. Just not 9-1 this time, eh?
No, a pleasure. Safe trip to you all and have a lovely Christmas as well. Take care.
Cheers, Andy. So, like almost pretty much everybody else in the league, Motherwell found it hard to put together any sort of form. A couple draws lately. Start of this month, a very spirited performance, but ultimately a pretty miserable capitulation at home to Celtic. And, Martin, as with Ross County, we can actually expect them to come at us and attack us. In theory, that should work in our favour, shouldn't it?
It should do, yeah. I mean, we spoke last week about how, you know, we had success against Kilmarnock because, you know, As good or as bad as you want to say Kilmarnock are, no, they did try and play a little bit of football against us, and Motherwell are exactly that kind of side. They will try and play a little bit of football. So there's a possibility for us to play the kind of game that I think we're best at. That will obviously include, hopefully, the kind of the best players and the ones that we want to see, like McGinn and Rooney, hopefully starting.
Christy Martin mentions the Kilmarnock game. I think the difference between Kilmarnock and Motherwell is that Motherwell appear to have a bit more strength about their spine. They will come at us, but not necessarily try and play as much football. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Motherwell are a better side than Kilmarnock, but at the same time, you know, it's only Motherwell. I don't want to, like, we're not in the best form at the moment, but we're very, very capable of going there and taking the game to them and winning convincingly. They're a decent side and we're not in the best form, but I still definitely fancy our chances.
They've got some pretty obvious threats. Louis Moult has been doing it for the best part of 18 months on and off for Motherwell. The back four on Saturday, just overall, notwithstanding the second Ross County goal, overall looked very shaky. And part of that, obviously, is because we do attack so much and we were behind for so long in the game that fullbacks are pushing on. Do you expect any change to that? Or do you think now is the time to finally build a unchanged centre-half partnership?
I think it's time to, you know, decide who you want there. I don't think O'Connor is going to get in it, be moving into midfield, to be honest. I think that I'd like to see O'Connor and Considine in there. That will mean having Shinny at left back. Whether we get that is an entirely another thing, but this idea of we've lost a game, and yeah, we've lost a goal to seal the game for Ross County, which was embarrassing, but to then just think, well, we'll just swap again. I mean, the kind of errors that we saw for that goal, you know, Ash Taylor's got that mistake in his locker many times over. I wouldn't really be keen on seeing him starting anytime soon at centre-half. I mean, I want Considine and O'Connor there. We've tried so many partnerships and they've not really clicked. We need to just settle on a pairing.
As much, Christy, as you spoke about the value of a squad earlier on, that partnership idea between the goalkeeper and the centre-half, that's quite key, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really important. And it's like a virtuous cycle, and I think it sometimes gets overlooked. Like, we surely can't ignore the fairly obvious loss of Danny Ward last season and the impact it had on Taylor and Reynolds, who looked very secure and then suddenly looked like they'd never even seen a football after winter. Trying to develop that bond between the two centre-backs and the goalkeeper is really important. I don't know what our best combination is at the back, to be perfectly honest. I almost think that at this stage it doesn't matter that much. I think we're... So we have four centre-back options, five if you include Murph switches. So we have four centre-back options, and it's really on McInnes. Like, if none of them is making themselves undroppable, then McInnes is just going to have to sort of pick two and put his faith in them. The tinkering in important areas like centre-back, I don't think is going to do us too much good.
Martin, Motherwell away this Friday, Hearts away the Friday after. Those away games in particular look eminently losable. Two games certainly that did for us towards the tail end of last season. You get the feeling this could unravel, if it hasn't already, fairly quickly.
It could do. I mean, I do think we'll come away with a positive result on Friday. I mean, Motherwell, you know, in terms of form, have been pretty appalling all season. I mean, bar the Betfred Cup, I don't think they've put consecutive wins together all season. And they were coming off the back of two draws, so that could mean anything. But yeah, I can totally see where you're coming from. I mean, if we were to lose on Friday and lose to Hearts, things could be looking pretty bad for us. It stresses the importance of, you know, you got to get a performance out of the players that we have. There's nothing we can do right at this moment about bringing in players or, you know, adding to the squad. No, we have what we have right now until the window opens. So you really have to, the importance of playing the best 11, the best footballing players, because that is the way you're going to beat a team like certainly like Motherwell. By playing football. Hearts might be a different option. I mean, I'll be honest, I've not seen them play since they've had the new manager in. I would assume that they're slightly less physical than they were, but, you know, I'm willing to be surprised on that one. But yeah, like you say as well, it really did us last season. It was pretty much the end of the season, the game where Celtic won 1-0 with that late goal against Kilmarnock, and then we went and lost that afternoon, and Robson got sent off at Motherwell, was pretty much the death of any kind of title challenge we had. We're not in that position, sadly, this season, but it doesn't make it any less important about getting a win on Friday night.
But final point, Christy, just two things are brought to mind really here. Firstly, these things and seasons as a whole turn on small margins. I mean, if you think back to Jaden Stockley's miss at Ibrox, if he scores that, every chance we're going to win there, it's a huge turning point for our season. We bounce back immediately from losing the cup final. And, you know, it's the broken club crests of the Rangers that appear on the tabloid pages, and the crisis arrives at Ibrox instead. The second thing is that under McInnes, in most seasons, we've been pretty good at bouncing back from defeat. It's too early to suggest that things are lingering too long here, but it does seem that the League Cup final defeat is casting quite a long shadow.
Yeah, it does feel that way. I'm never sure how much of that is us as fans feeling that and kind of projecting it onto reality, or just assuming it's reality for the players or inside the dressing room. You know, we can easily get that trepidation about going to Fir Park or going to Tynecastle or wherever. But the players know what it takes to go there and win. They've done it before. They've done it before recently. So I do think that sometimes we as fans can be a bit unfair in our, you know, projecting our negativity onto the players and assuming that it's reality. That said, we've been very good at putting together winning runs under McInnes. We've been excellent at that. But we have had a few downswings in the last couple of years. We have had a few little spells, little runs where we've lost a game and then we've lost two, and then we've got a bit brittle. We've tried a bit too hard, and instead of sort of bending but not breaking and then snapping back stronger, we have broken. And I think back to the 5-1 at home to St Johnstone last October, when we'd lost a couple of games before and we just snatched out. We just tried too hard and everything that could have gone wrong did. And I think these are the tests of McInnes's stewardship. How successful is he at keeping the atmosphere good, at keeping the players motivated, and not letting people sulk, at instilling the ethic in the players that when faced with adversity, the correct response is hard work. And I think he's been good at that by and large, but we're in one of those little, as you mentioned earlier, one of those little inflection points potentially, whereby if we lose these couple of games, you know, it's going to be really hard to steady the ship. But by the same token, what a great opportunity, and I know this is what McInnes will be emphasising right now, what a great opportunity to go play a couple of tricky games and set out a marker. Everyone in the media, everyone in Scottish football that isn't of an AFC disposition is expecting and kind of hoping for us to capitulate right now so that Rangers are, you know, back where they belong, quote-unquote, as Celtic's main rivals. McInnes will be emphasising the amazing opportunity to go and really make a name for ourselves, really, you know, put down a marker that this team has character, that we are the real deal and that we're very capable of taking a couple of tricky games and winning them handsomely.
Well, absolutely, because things could definitely look a lot brighter in 11 or so days' time, given that the Rangers also have to play in Perth and have got Celtic visiting Ibrox as well. So the opportunity does exist there for Aberdeen to bounce back in some style. But let's be clear, the defending on Friday night is going to have to be a little bit better than it was this last Saturday for us to do that.
Sure is.
But my thanks to our guest this evening, to Christy Keenan. Thank you, Christy.
My pleasure. Thanks, Richard. Thanks, Martin.
It's been really interesting listening to that discussion on, well, it has for me anyway, maybe not for you, dear listener, but anyway. Thank you also to someone who's always interesting, Martin Clunes. Martin, thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
We'll be back after Christmas, probably after the Hamilton game as well, looking ahead to the final league game before the split. Joining us that week will be Rachel Corsi, and we'll talk a little bit about the Euro 2017 as Scotland reach their first major tournament in the women's game. That's us for this week. Good night and thank you.